Thank you so much for this continuation of this great lectureship and the great good that it does. Buy the book and use the book. I know it's a great help in a lot of things that I do. I know it'll be of help to you as well. Appreciate this congregation. Appreciate the School of Preaching here. Whenever I'm talking, and I do a lot of talking to young men and older men as well who want to preach the gospel, I tell them to go to Southwest. I didn't come here, but I tell them that's where you need to go. And we have some in the audience who can vouch for that. Appreciate again the invitation. Appreciate so much the people who are usually off to my right at lectureships, and that is the Tullers, who do such a tremendous job. And I think about all the good that those DVDs, those CDs, and all of those things, the good that that does around the world. It thrills me to get to speak on a lectureship and then to see them taping and knowing that this is going to go literally all over the world. It is a thrilling thing to me. I pray for their continued health, and I know that some of their lectureships have had to drop off a little bit, but I continue to pray that your work continues on and keep up the good work. I'm very proud this afternoon to have my dad and my two sisters with me, and I'm always proud, especially now, to have the love of my wife, Susie, with me, and especially here with me today. And it's good to see everyone. You know, I love gospel preachers, and I especially love those who have abilities that when they preach the gospel and when they're talking, for example, on the judgment, you know, they make it so clear and they paint such a vivid picture. In fact, I've said it myself. I've heard other people say it before. You know, that was so plain that I could hear the angels singing. Or that was so plain, I could feel the flames of hell at my feet. And I appreciate preachers that have that kind of ability. I've always admired it, and I would like it for myself. I also appreciate those preachers, and I believe perform a tremendous service to brothers and sisters in Christ and others outside of the church when they get people to stop and think about time. Now, you may be thinking, well, how hard is that? We think about time all the time. We got to start at the right time. We got to finish at the right time. I got things I got to do in a little bit. I've got to run. No, I'm talking about the brevity of time, the uncertainty of time, and the fact that there is going to come a judgment day. When preachers perform that great task to get people to stop from their hurried lives for just a few moments to think about time, and that it's running out, I think that adds a lot to do with people's getting ready for their lives to end and getting ready for the judgment. I've always appreciated that when I've heard lessons like that. And I can say, man, that made me stop and count the minutes and count the time and think about the brevity of life and that I'm not going to be here forever because don't we, most of us here, except for a lot of older ones probably, most of us think we've got all the time in the world. And the truth of the matter is we don't know how much time we have. So I've always admired that of gospel preachers who can paint it so clearly. There's no doubt in your mind that you realize, listen, I don't have a say-so in this. You know, there's a few things that I can do to maybe help the process, but I've seen a lot of joggers die, haven't you? So when we get to thinking about time and the fact that life is brief, I think preachers who have that ability to really bring people to stop and think about the brevity of life and what's after that, perform a valuable service for our Lord. You know, James is running the whole gamut here in James chapter 4, 13 through 17. Let's take the time and read our text, verses 13 through 17. James says, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and we'll buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is but a vapor that appeareth for a little while and then vanisheth away. For what you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." In this last five verses of chapter 4, James has run the whole gamut throughout the book. He started talking about their past, and that included Christ's redemptive work for their salvation. He's talking about their present lives now and how practical the book is because of that. But in these last five verses of chapter 4, he starts talking about the future. And he gets their attention by talking about the future and showing them that all of their todays are related to their tomorrows. And that it all leads up to that great day that's ushered in by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ at the judgment. Quick synopsis of these five verses. James is writing Christians to help them to realize, first of all, that life is uncertain. We can either die or the Lord can come. So you need to recognize that life is fragile. It's uncertain. And then he continues by saying that when planning for the future, the Christian's attitude must be, if the Lord wills. And then he closes it out by saying, when you know something you need to do that's good and you don't do it, that's sin. Let's look at a commentary of these five verses, because in doing so, we're actually going to be answering a lot of questions. Like, for example, is it wrong to plan? Should we plan for the future or should we not plan for the future? And what is man's role in all of this? And I think James answers all of these questions very great as we just look at the text itself. We start off in verse 13, go to now, ye that say today or tomorrow, we shall go into a certain city and buy and sell and get gain. He says, go to now, which literally means listen to me. He's getting their attention. He's getting our attention by saying, listen to me. If you're this type of person that's planning for the future, you better take special consideration of what you're doing and think about this with me. In verse 13, he pictures those who have a definite plan. I mean, they have a deliberate plan. They have things scoped out. Picture, as you will, here are some traders, some merchants, and they're leaning over the table, and across that table, they have a map set out, and they have lines drawn, and they've got everything all planned out, exactly what they plan to do, exactly what they're going to do, and everything is ready for just exactly what they plan. It is interesting when you notice this, the verb for trade here is the same verb that's used in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 3, when Peter's talking about to cheat or deceive there. But that's not what James is dealing with here. He's not using it in that way. But the idea here is these people are making plans without God. I mean, just look there at verse 13. There's not a thing in there about God and about His will for their lives. Here's what we're going to do. Here's our plans. Here's what we're going to accomplish. And not one thing about, wonder what God thinks about that. How many times have we read, for example, especially in the Old Testament, when people went off to do their own thing and were defeated in what they were doing, and then they come back and say, I wonder what God thinks about that. Good question, bad timing. They should have thought about that first. Well, these merchants aren't thinking about it at all, you know. Here's what we're planning to do. Everything's all planned out. No questions about it. Notice how good their planning is, how well they've done. They planned out, for example, when they're going to begin, today or tomorrow. They planned out where this is going to play out. Here's a certain city. They've already planned out how long this is going to take. 1 year. They've planned out what their plans include, buying and selling. And they've planned out why they're going to do this in the first place, to accumulate gain. They have everything planned out. So it seems. You know, when we read this and we think about this, how many times have we done the same thing? We're meticulous. We have it. We have the lines drawn. Here's exactly what we're planning to do, and we have it all planned out. So it seems. Come to find out, we don't have it planned out as well as we should. The main problem in this section that James is dealing with is not planning ahead. That's not it. God has given us talents. He's given us abilities. Good stewards will plan ahead. That's not the problem here. The problem is they've made all of these plans without God. Now they're in trouble, you see, because all of their plans, it doesn't depend upon them, but it does depend upon God. but they don't see that. And that's the problem he's dealing with, making plans without God. Again, verse 13, nothing in there about God. They're not concerned about that at all, and they need to be. It's like that rich young ruler, or that rich farmer, rather, in Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21, who said to himself, "Thou hast goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." What did God say? "Thou fool, this day shall thy soul be required of thee." And then whose will all of these things be that you've left behind? The problem with the rich farmer was not that he planned. That's not it. God wants us to plan. A good steward will plan. But he planned without God. Nothing about God in his life at all. And that's where he made his mistake. The fool needed to realize that all plans are dependent upon God's will. Now, when are we going to learn that? Oh, you say, "Oh no, are you there? Your plans, they always include God. Is that right?" Sometimes our plans don't always include God. And so he says here, look, listen, think about this course of action. You're making all the plans, but you're not making the most important plan. You're not taking care of the most important decision in all of this. So James says, look here, listen to this. Look at verse 14. "Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is but a vapor that appeareth for a little while and then vanisheth away." James is emphasizing here that life is uncertain. There is no one in this audience, not one, no one listening to these CDs or tapes or anything, no one who will be reading that book, who is absolutely certain that they will be alive next year. But you know what? There's not a one of us can be absolutely certain that we'll be alive tomorrow. Oh, I heard some, that's right. But how many of us really believe that? You made plans for that? Oh, we may have planned. You know, we make plans, don't we? Years in advance, we make plans by the month. Nothing wrong with that. But what if? And that's exactly what James is getting at here. In Proverbs 27 and verse 1, there's already been the connection between the book of Proverbs and James about practicality. He says, "Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth." And we don't. How many people have I literally watched make their plans for the future, you know, even with retirement in mind, and in a matter of weeks, I could name names. I stood at their graveside and gave their eulogy. And they had plans. And the same thing happens to us. You know, the people James is describing here had banked their future on a year of tomorrows. We're going to start tomorrow. And they banked their future on a year of tomorrows. And even with their best plans, they didn't even know what was going to happen tomorrow. They had planned for 365 days of trading, and they didn't even know what was going to happen tomorrow because they left God out. Now, they could plan for 365 days of trading with the idea, if it's the Lord's will, and live in such a way so that if the Lord was to come or take their life, they're prepared, they're ready. Why? Because they made the right plans. But these people didn't do that. They planned all of this out for the whole year without thinking about, what if I should die tomorrow? I mean, think about this for just a moment. Here they plan to start tomorrow. What if they got sick? Couldn't continue. What would happen to their plans then? Well, let's say, okay, they did start tomorrow and they went to such a city, and let's say war broke out in that city and devastated the city. What would happen to their plans then? Their plans would be gone. Okay, let's say that they did start tomorrow and they did go to a certain city and they did stay 1 year. What happens if the market was to dry up for their product? Their plans would be stopped. Okay, they started tomorrow, they went to such a city, they're going to stay for a year, and they're able to buy and sell and get gain. What if robbers robbed them of their money? What happens then? What if the government, this could happen, right? It's almost April 5th. The government comes in and takes all their money away. What happens then to their plans? Or what if circumstances were to happen that they needed every bit of every penny that they gained just to survive? What about their plans then? Okay, they started tomorrow. They went to such and such a city. They were to buy and sell and get gain, and they did. But in the process of that, death's cold hands wrapped around them, and they breathe their last breath on this earth. What about their plans then? You know, when it comes down to it, how much control do we have? How much control do we have? Can we control that little tiny blood clot from going to the heart and killing you like that? Can we control that? No. We might can help it or hinder it, but we have no control. Have we been able to control modern means of transportation so that there are never any accidents? Can we control that? No. You know, that's something that annoys us, doesn't it? Because there's so much out there we don't have control of, and we don't. Well, James is emphasizing that life is uncertain, and we need to plan for that. So James asks the question, what is your life? That's a heavy question. Go ahead and answer it without God. You got no answer. You can't answer that question without God. What is your life? Struggle with it all you want to, but you've got no answer without God. Control. Yeah, we have a semblance of control, don't we? Seems to be some kind of control because, again, we talk about death. We can exercise and we can eat the proper food and all of that and maybe extend our lives. But like I said, I've heard of joggers dying too. And again, this idea of transportation, this idea of thinking that it's in our hands. We're in control of all those things when the truth is we're not in control. We are not in control. The absolute truth is life is uncertain. Friends, listen to me. We have no assurance at all that we'll be alive next year. We could come back to the lectureship and there will be some we will not see, perhaps because they did not live the rest of the year. We have no assurance, not even one, that we will be alive next month. Now, we make monthly plans, right? Do you think about that plan? What happens if you're no longer with us? Now, what happens if you're dead? There's not a one of us that has absolute certainty that we'll be alive next week. You've made plans for next week. I know you have. I have. But have you included God in that plan? There's not a single one of us that can guarantee we'll be alive in the next minute. That's the point James is making. What is your life? It is a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Preachers, if we could get that message to the people, perhaps they would be ready. They would make their plans with God in mind. Forget about all the other plans or make those plans, but remember, what if? It's okay. I'm ready. It's okay. I'm ready. Because the truth is, probably in the majority of our congregations, the majority of people have not really thought seriously about that. What a valuable service we will perform as gospel preachers when we preach, for example, what James is saying and get it in the people's mind. What is your life? James says, I'll tell you what it is. It's a vapor, seemingly real, and in the next moment, gone. I know what people think. I know what young people think a lot of times. They say, you know, my grandfather lived to be 100 years of age. So, you know, that's a long time. Great. That's wonderful that your grandfather lived that time. Now, I know a bunch of us probably don't want to be alive for 100 years. I don't really think that I do. But you think, and Foy's down there laughing at me. So we can take care of that, brother. My grandfather lived 100 years, okay? So, friends, what James is saying is, it doesn't matter how long you live. Live 100 years, but in view of eternity, it's still what? It's still brief. 100 years as compared to eternity. It doesn't matter how long you live. So don't say, well, I could live to be 100 years. So what? It's still the brevity of life. It's such a short time. James gives a very excellent representation of the brevity of life when he says it's but a vapor. I don't know what kind of vapor he was talking about, but it doesn't matter. Here's the point. It's there for a while, but then it's gone. You ever heard the statement, here today, gone tomorrow? That fits exactly with what James is saying. And it's true. Truly, we know not what will be on the morrow. So plan with that in mind. Make your plans. God isn't saying don't plan. A good steward plans. But plan with the idea. What does God have to say about this? With God in my life. And that's exactly his next point. In verse 15 he says, for that you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall do this or that. James is telling his readers that in order to face life properly, you've got to recognize that God is in control. We must recognize that. We must recognize that we're not. We can do everything that's within our power to do, and we can still die tomorrow, today. He's not against planning for the future. He's warning them against planning the future without God. Because if we plan our future without God, doesn't matter what we've planned, none of it really matters. People don't know the future. I don't, you don't. Now, you can call one of those psychic hotlines, but I always wonder why they want to know who it is that's calling. Shouldn't they know? But they don't know. And Christians don't know. And that's why Christians ought to face the idea of tomorrow with the idea, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. That's just not referring to the future, talking about, you know, retirement. Later on in life, it's talking about the future even as of tomorrow. Tomorrow's the future. What plans have you made? What if, with life being uncertain, what if you die? Those plans aren't going to matter, are they? But there was one that is. If you planned it with God, that's what's going to matter. This is not just referring to that future way down the line. It's talking about tomorrow. Why? Because we could die. Luke chapter 12, the rich farmer. The Lord could come tomorrow. Matthew 24, 36 through 44. We say, oh, you know, that's right. The Lord could come tomorrow. But how many of you plan for that? Have you made any plans if the Lord should come tomorrow? We say, oh, yes, I believe that. Do we really? What kind of plan you made for it? Have you really made a plan? Really? People's lives change daily. Homes burn down. Does that change people's lives? Yes. Jobs are lost. Will that change a person's life? Absolutely. What about unexpected company coming in? Does that ever change anything? Absolutely. I mean, we stayed with the Tim Ayers family one time for lectureship. We'd keep them up till 3 o'clock in the morning. Now his wife leaves town. Leaves the state. She's gone. You know, unexpected company sometimes. It changes things. We do not know what tomorrow holds. And so as a Christian, we live every day with a plan. I'm going to do the Lord's will. I'm going to accept the Lord's will. And I'm going to be ready for when the Lord comes. Now that's what a Christian will do. Been making any plans? We must approach life as uncertain and accept the fact that, you know, all of it's in the Lord's hands. It's not in mine. It's not in yours. Someone says, well, if the Lord wills, that's a formula, isn't it? So that everything we do, like as I stepped up here, if the Lord wills, I'll make it to the podium. If the Lord wills, I'll present my lesson. If the Lord wills, I'll make it down those steps. If the Lord wills, we'll drive. Is it a formula? No, it's not a formula. You know how many people, have you known people like that? Elderly members used to do that a lot. If the Lord wills it, the Lord, use it as if it maybe was a formula. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's not what James is saying. You need to say that every step you take. What he's saying is you've got to have complete dependence upon God. That's what he's saying. That's the idea of the plans that we make. We have complete dependence upon God. We have complete acceptance of what God's will is in our lives. That's exactly the sentiment in Proverbs 3 and verse 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not upon thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. The idea of being subject to the will of God and accepting that and planning for it. Two things here qualified by the phrase, if the Lord wills. If the Lord wills, we shall live. If the Lord wills, we shall do this or that. We should be so dependent upon the Lord's will that our lives will continue if it's the Lord's will. You believe that? That my plans will be carried out if it's the Lord's will. A man at our congregation works for one of the Bell helicopter, and he has to go over to California a lot, and they wanted him to move his family to California. And I said, now there's some good brethren in California. I've got some good friends that are preachers there. And so I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just saying, you know, brother, I'm gonna pray against that because I don't want you to leave. I want you to stay here. Your family's doing so good here and they're growing so strong. I want you to stay here. And he said, well, brother, you can't fight against God. And I said, neither can you. And I won. They offered him a package and he's staying home. He's staying here. Making his plans with the idea of, what does my family need? You know, where can we serve God the best? And he believed it was home. You know, decisions are a part of our everyday life, are they not? He made the decision, and I do appreciate the fact that you're here at this hour after lunch. You know, you made that decision. We make decisions all the time. We make decisions on where we're going to live and how we'll make a living. We make decisions on where we're going to work, where we're going to worship. We make thousands of decisions in our lives. But here's the question. When you make your decisions, what comes to the top of the list when you make that decision? You know, if we were honest, we might have to say, the money's good. Think anybody ever makes decisions? All the time. Well, you know, friends or counselors or family members have, you know, counseled me on this. You know, maybe that's how they made their decision. Maybe they made their decision because of convenience. Maybe they made their decision because, well, you know, it's a personal preference of mine. People make decisions all the time. What comes to the top? I've had brethren say, you know, I'm retiring and we're going to move to such and such a place. And I asked them, what's the church like there? Well, I don't know. And I remember on a couple of occasions, I said, well, I do know. And you'll not be able to worship there and worship faithfully and truthfully to God. You won't be able to worship. You're going to have to drive miles in order. Well, I didn't think of that. Well, who made the decision for you? Not God. Well, we can play golf every day and, you know, we do this. We do. But what kind of environment are you going to move you and your wife to upon retirement? Who makes the decisions? We are presumptuous when we make decisions about the future without God because we don't know. Only God knows. I know that when we do lessons and present lessons, we often tell people, you know, we ought to have it in our lives and in our prayers, if the Lord wills. Thy will be done. I want us to think real seriously about that for a moment. Because when you say that, do you really mean it? Oh, sure. No. Do you really mean, God, I want your will to take precedence over mine? See, that's what you're saying when you're saying, thy will be done. You really mean that? God, I want your will to take precedence over mine. And how truthful are we when we make that statement, when we throw a tantrum or something, when things don't go my way? That's not what I wanted. I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. Don't say, thy will be done, if you don't mean it. God, I want your will to overrule my will. Is that what you mean? Is that what Jesus meant in the garden? Absolutely. And that's what we must mean if we make statements like that. I want God's rule, God's will to rule over my life. Paul understood that when he talked about the church in Corinth. How many times did he say, for example, in 1 Corinthians 4:19, that he wanted to come to Corinth if it's the Lord's will? Because he recognized before that there were times he wanted to go to a certain place and maybe was headed that direction when God said, nope, you're going over here. And do we read where Paul said, no, I'm not. I'm going over here. No, because his attitude was what? The Lord's will. And that was the Lord's will. Not that. This was. So that's where he went. He really meant that. And sometimes we think, well, I'm going to retire. I'm going to move over here. What's the church like? Oh, don't know. Don't care. I'll just do the best I can. How do you know that's the Lord's will? He said he wanted to spend some time in Corinth. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 7. If the Lord permit. When's the last time you thought of it like that? Your life like that? The decisions you make like that? You know, God knows our hearts. He knows our motives. And when we say the words, thy will be done, and we say we're planning with him in mind, God really knows if we're in his, if he's in our plans or not, doesn't he? He knows if he's in our plans. Verse 16, but now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. What's the matter here? They're making these plans without God, and they're puffed up about it. Look how good we've made these plans to go into this city, and for a year we're going to buy and sell and get gain. Look at the plans we're making without God. And they're boasting at their self-sufficiency. Oh, we got this all planned out. And I can just see God saying, yeah, you have it all planned out. You know, as we plan and make decisions, we must exalt God and not ourselves. These people had all the sufficiency of mind to say, look at what we're doing. We don't need God. We don't need anything. We've got it all planned out. Is your life ever like that? Like right now, you got it all planned out. First year students, you got it all planned out, don't you? Second year students are saying, I thought I did. And once they graduate, I want to make sure God's helping me with this. Instead of trusting in God, they were trusting in themselves. Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 5, not that we are sufficient in and of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. There's the idea. There's where we need to be. It's not through my plans, it's through God. And then verse 17, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. How does that connect? Well, you know it connects because of the word therefore. Connects everything that he's previously written to what he's fixing to say now. And what is that? The point is this. These Jewish Christians had made these plans. It doesn't matter how detailed they are. Doesn't matter how well they're going to carry these plans out. They've made these plans without God. And here's the point. And they knew better. They knew better than to do that. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, he's talking in the context there about the plans they have made. They knew better. Brethren, we know better. But we don't always act better, do we? We don't always do it, do we? And when we know better and we don't do it, James says it is sin. Oh, we know better, don't we? Sure we do. The Bible offers a lot of examples of this idea of the sin of omission. They know better, they just don't do it. Remember the Pharisees? They omitted the weightier matters of the law. Matthew chapter 23, they knew better. And so Jesus said, you're blind guides, you're going to fall into the pit. He didn't say you might, he said you're going. You're blind guides, you're going to fall into the pit. They knew better. The one talent man. How wicked was he? Well, he's wicked because Jesus called him a wicked servant, didn't he? Now, the word wicked there has to do a little bit different than what you and I think, because you and I think when you're wicked, it's because you've done bad things. There's nothing said in the context of Matthew chapter 25, the one talent man, about anything bad he did. He failed to do that which he knew he ought to do. And because of that, Jesus said, he's a wicked servant. He failed to produce fruit. He failed to do the good he was responsible to do. And before we get too riled up about the one talent man, we better think about ourselves. Anything at all out there that you know you should be doing and you're not doing? As I ask the question to myself as well. When God's children fail to do good, who do they disappoint? They disappoint everybody. They disappoint God. They disappoint themselves. They disappoint the world. They disappoint everybody because the world is to see Christ living in us. And when we plan our plans without God, they don't see God living in us. They see us thinking we can do it on our own, and we can't. You can't. Again, remember, another minute. Another good illustration is Matthew 25 and verse 41 through 43. Then shall he say up to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. And I was naked, and you clothed me not. Sick and in prison, and you visited me not. You know you should be doing those things, and you're not doing it. And James says, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Jesus makes it clear that we're going to be lost in the devil's hell for not only doing evil, but for failing to do the things we know we should do. That makes you grow weak. Because surely all of us know things we need to be doing, and we fail. God, have mercy upon us. These Christians, James mentions, knew to plan their life with God in mind, and they failed to carry that out. And James says, you have sinned. James closes this out. I love the lesson before us, Brother Barry's lesson. He points out in verses 11 and 12, you continue to gossip and slander, you're sinning. Verses 13 through 16, he says, if you continue to try to live life without planning with God in mind, you're in sin. And thirdly, he says, if you know there's something you need to be doing and you're failing to do it, it's sin. What's James saying? James is saying this. plan your life with God or you're sinning. Let's do a better job of thinking about time and thinking about the end of our lives. Another minute.